Hey everybody, if it's Tuesday at 1 o'clock, it must be Tuesdays with Dave. How's everybody doing today? It is a beautiful Tuesday here in Boston. It's getting a little windy. We've got a storm coming up the coast. But all in all, it's a pretty good day. It's warm outside, which is unusual for this time of year. So I want to welcome, first of all, I want to welcome many new mastery students or mentorship students that have come on board in the last couple of weeks. This is a proven program. Simply do what your coach says, follow the system, and it'll work. It'll work when you work, because you got to do some work as well. But it will happen. Sometimes it happens fast, sometimes it happens a little bit slower, but it will happen. Persistence pays. All right, what do we got going on? We just had the Private Money Bootcamp last weekend. That was taught by Bob Bowman and Kim Taylor. Feedback was they did an awesome job there, which they usually do, and have pretty good sized crowd there. What we have coming up is we have the Dallas Immersion on October 27th down there in Dallas, Texas. It's a pretty good market. If you're not from that area, you may want to jump onto that Immersion train because we did really well in the Dallas area and the Texas markets, and it just keeps continuing to move forward. The Portland Immersion event is November 3rd to November 5th, kind of a sleeper market. That market still has some legs to it. And then we have the two-day business building event, which is November 15th to the 16th right here in Rockland. That is, I used to say, that's the only event that I teach now, but I'm actually doing Elevate as well. We did the Perfect Your Presentation, which is an event that we did 5 years ago, and then we resurrected it for one time. And we did that in Plymouth not too long ago. And behind that, we had our first meeting of Elevate. And that is between Elevate and the two-day business building event. Those are the only two events that I'm personally teaching. So that is the 15th and the 16th, and that is where I take you to the Harvard Club for dinner. And that's going to be fun. We actually got a pretty big probably the largest crowd that we've had coming to that particular event. So right behind that is the sponsorship event, November 17th to the 18th, and that is in Rockland as well, which is just south of Boston if you're not familiar with it. One other thing I wanted to mention is we are actually doing a field trip to Elevate group and also the Mastery group or the Mentorship group. Every year for the last 3 years, I've done a field trip over to the Wilson Conference's Super Summit. It's in Miami, and it's December 5th and 6th. And at that event, the Wilson Conference is an educational company for family offices. So a family office is any family that's made between $20 million and $7 billion, and usually some other industry. And the whole idea behind the family office is they create an office so that wealth goes from generation to generation, and it's not blown. Pretty good system that they have in place, and there's family offices now all throughout the world, and there are family conferences throughout the world as well. The Wilson Group, Richard Wilson is a Harvard grad. That's how I got connected with him. And he runs one of the better ones. There's other ones out there called Opal. Opal Finance runs them as well, and there's a few other groups that run them too. But the Wilson conferences, we go down. If you decide to go, it's going to cost you money. It's not free. But I did negotiate that it's normally, if you go on the Wilson Conference website, it's $995, and I negotiated it down to $775 for our students. I get no part of that, by the way. There's not any type of a joint venture split, but you do have to go through this company, so I know that you're on the list. Before, you used to call over and say you're a Lindahl student or RE Mentor student, and they give you the discount. But the problem was I was losing people, because what we do is, before the event, we're going to have a meeting about a month before, and I'm going to tell you how to prepare for that event. We're going to talk about the people that you're going to meet. We're going to talk about the way you should be dressed at the event. We're going to talk about the different stuff that you're going to be handing out, what it should be at the event. And we're going to talk about, you know, the event itself, what your expectations are, which, by the way, this is probably the event where some of the wealthiest people in the world or the country are at, or their advisors. Where they know that they're there to get, not to educate themselves, but also to get investments. And there's going to be all kinds of investments there. There's going to be real estate investments. There's going to be oil and gas investments, timber investments, fish farm investments. But they what the Wilson Conference does is they educate and they also bring investments in, so they can match the families with investments. So it's one of the easiest places to network, and it's one of the places where you can get some really big money. Even if you're just starting out, it will give you an idea of how much money there actually is out there, and realize that money really isn't a problem. Number one, but number two, it will give you experience in talking with these people. So when you go to another event, you'll already have that experience, and you can make some really good connections. You may not have to go to another event. So a month before we meet, I tell you how to get prepared for it. About a week before, we meet on another conference call as well, talk a little bit more in depth about it. Then the night before the event, we actually meet. It's not at a hotel, but we will be staying at a particular hotel. I'll let you know which one it is. It's at a conference center. But we will meet the night before, and then the next day it's game on. We used to try to meet the first night, and to talk about what happened that day. But, you know, so many people would get invite people out to dinner, you know, or go to different places, you know, different events that are actually going on as well. So we just meet the night before. And we talk during the day, and we update each other what's going on. But it is great. I mean, to go into an event like that and be prepared and to get the practice of it, it's just a really good experience, and that's why we've been doing it for the last 3 years. It just so happened 3 years ago when I was going to the event myself. I go to these events every year. I go to this particular one every year. There's a couple others that I go to every year, and I thought to myself, you know, I'm headed to that event. I might as well see if any mastery students are interested in going too. And if anybody is, then great. And the first year, I think there were 7 people that went. And then the next year, there were many more than that. And then this year, there will probably be about 40 or 50 of us there. And it's going to be good. So anyways, if you want to go to on that field trip, just call the office, talk with Jeannie, Jermaine, and tell them that you want to go to the Wilson event, and you will get on the list, and then you will get some emails, and I'll let you know when that first month out call is, which is coming up pretty soon. All right. Got a high five for Jeff and Shari Kissy from the Capital Group. They recently purchased a 130-unit in Beech Grove, Indiana. I own in Indiana as well. 10 minutes outside of Indianapolis, bought it for $5.9 million. Value plays are, the rents are $225 below market. Wow. I wonder how that happened. They are updating and getting $275 to $310 per unit. So if I'm reading that right, there's actually a swing of $500. That'd be interesting. If Jeff, if you're on the line, pop in, because I would like to talk to you about this. They changed the name of the complex from Woodcrest to the Brixton. Interesting name. And the exterior, so the interior improvements include replacing appliances, swapping windows and doors, and improving the insulation. The exterior improvements include outdoor recreation area, big dog park, barbecue area. It should be a big park for small dogs. That's the way it should be worded. You don't want any big dogs in your complexes. Barbecue area, outdoor games such as cornhole, and an oversized chess set. This was an off-market deal because they closed on a few others this year. The listing broker approached them about the deal. So it's a pocket listing, and they raised their money through their existing investors, new investors. They held dinners for investors and spoke in front of many high net worth individuals. So we've got a high five to Jeff and Shari. And we got a second high five going out to Anita and Seth Turner from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. They closed on an 8-unit last Friday. The purchase price was $765,000. The seller was asking $825,000. The value add was the rents about $200 below market, another big swing. Seth found the property on the internet, and they're very excited about closing on their first of many multifamily purchases. Congratulations to Anita and Seth from Baton Rouge. You know, I look at that the first property being an 8-unit, and I remember how afraid I was to do my first property, which was a 3-unit. And then after I did the first one, it took me a year to get over the fear of doing it. And after I did my first one, within a couple of months, I had 3 more. Within 6 months, I had 9. And within that first year, I had 11. And then it was just crazy after that. It's been crazy ever since. It's been a good ride. All right, so to call in with questions, press star zero. Star zero will get you into the queue and on the Wisecracker line. So let's see if anybody anybody with previous knowledge actually queued up at the beginning. Operator, anybody in the queue?
No, we have no questions at the moment.
All right, so get into the queue, press star zero. While you're queuing up, I am going to read some questions that came over via email. The first one is from Victoria Russo from Chicago. She says, we've been advised to stay away from D neighborhoods. D stands for drug dealer. Until we have a few properties under our belt. Yet we also taught to recognize emerging markets in the sign of a major turnaround. Which is the stronger advice to stay away from, the bad neighborhood or jump early into a major turnaround? Jump early into a major turnaround. Stay away from the bad neighborhoods if you can help it. D properties, especially at the beginning, are very difficult. D does stand for drug dealer. And it's just it's a wicked pain to do a D property. You got to be really street smart, too. To be doing a D property. The type of people you're going to be dealing with, the clientele, you'll get rid of the drug dealer, another one will take its place. So you can make a lot of money in the Ds, but you don't have to buy Ds to make a lot of money. You can make just as much money in the Bs and the Cs when you buy them properly. And you'll have a lot better investing life. All right. Brian Newell from Fullerton, California writes in, I was wondering if you have a new emerging market list. The last one we got was in May. You know what? I don't think I have compiled a new one yet, but I will. It's about time I did, huh? I've got a bunch of different miscellaneous emerging markets in different places, so I will do that. I will make the commitment to create a new list, get up on the mentorship website, mastery website, and you'll have it within a week. How's that sound? I'll do one more. Dawn Charity from Kansas City writes in, I was listening to the home study course, and you talked about a times 10 valuation to quickly analyze a deal. You said you take the NOI and multiply by 10. If the asking price is higher than this, you said it's not a good deal, move on. But if it was at or below than the asking price, then we run the numbers on it. My question is, would this equal a 10 cap rate? Why is the Holy Trinity at an 8 cap rate? And we were taught the true cap rates for Kansas City were running 6 to 7 in this market. First of all, that is a 10 is the only number we can actually divide and multiply, and you still come out with the same type of NOI or purchase price. So that's why the times 10 valuation calculation is based on that. 10 cap is is typically C properties. But if you find the times 10 valuation calculation is if you just want to do a quick calculation, you look at it, and if it's priced around there, then you like the property, then you take the next step, which is to basically get the right numbers and put it into the analyzer or the spreadsheet. Usually at different levels, okay, the home study system is based on a basic level, and it takes you step by step to a more advanced level by the time you get done with that course. But at that particular stage, the time 10 valuation calculation, that's why people can wrap their heads around that easier sometimes than when you say the trinity of a cap rate of 8+, cash on cash return of 12+, and a debt coverage ratio of 1.6+. So just by saying that, if you're not the engineers love that stuff, but if you're not an engineer, you just kind of probably just went over your head. So his next question was, why is the Holy Trinity at 8 cap? And they were told that true cap rates for Kansas City were running around 6 to 7 in the market. Well, first of all, the Trinity is at an 8 cap because you need what I just said in the Trinity in order to get a deal that will cash flow properly so that you can take 25% of that deal. And if you have better numbers, you can take more of a carve-out. So that's why if the cap rate's at an 8, it has no reflection whatsoever of what market cap rates are. It's just whether or not the deal's numbers work. So if Kansas City cap rates are running at 6 to 7, that's fine. That doesn't mean that the properties that you're going to buy are at 6 or 7 or the only properties that are available that are 6 to 7. You got to, cast a big marketing net and have deals trickle in, and you'll get a deal that is at an 8 cap or plus. So don't get fooled by, sometimes cap rates go down to 5 or 6, but you can't buy it at 5 or 6. You can't buy it at 6 or 7. You can buy it 7.5. I say eight, but you know, at 7.5, you can get deals that are right on the margin. But you should, how do you get these eight caps in a market that is at a 6 and a 7? You get pocket listings from brokers because you have good relationships with those brokers. You, Jeff Kissy's testimonial talked about the fact that how he had a good relationship with the broker and he got that deal from the broker. You get eight caps from a direct mail campaign. You get eight caps from a motivated seller that puts an ad in the classifieds. You get eight caps from a residential realtor who doesn't understand how multifamily properties are calculated, their value, and you know, they put a deal on LoopNet. So there's a bunch of different ways where you can get these. Are they out there every day? Nope. Do you have to, you know, do you have to work to get them? Yeah, but, you know, if it was easy, everybody would be doing it. The biggest thing, though, is your relationships. You get great deals. The Kansas City market is such a good market. I've known people that have gone in and out of there and made so much money. Your broker relationships and your direct mail are the ones that will give you consistent, good deals once you form the relationships with the brokers properly. All right. Who do we have on the line today?
Okay. Our first question comes from Darren. Darren, please go ahead.
Hi, Dave. How's it going?
Hey, Darren. What's going on?
Doing good. Doing good. Looking forward to coming up to Boston. See you next month.
All right, coming up for business building?
Absolutely.
All right, it's going to be a good time.
Yeah, it is. I'm looking forward to it. I just was at Private Money this last weekend.
Oh, yeah, that went well, I heard.
It went really well, My mind's still swimming with all the ideas, and that's why I have a question.
Awesome.
So the question is, normally we're looking at offering somewhere, you know, 8, plus depending on the deal to our investors. But when we're fairly new students and we're looking to get some of our first deals, many of us will be raising some money for maybe some debt money up front to fund our acquisition costs, our down payment, that kind of stuff. What have you typically seen, and I know it's still specific, but typically what's a good return to attract those investors, those debt partners, to fund your initial costs?
It's the same for debt partners in this market. An 8% return is really
okay.
Good. You can get as low as 6 sometimes. Because, the banks are getting right now for – they're getting 3s and 4s.
Right.
So, I mean, if you – negotiate properly, sometimes you can get 6, but an 8 is a definite.
Okay, very good. And then one other question. Obviously with some of the deals you're doing, you're always wanting to protect your investors' money, whether they're debt partners for the initial costs or long-term partners for the full hold of the property. But what kind of contingency should you be building into your deal to protect that money so that when you do go to close, I mean, if you obviously don't want your money to go hard. That's one. That's just obviously something you're going to make sure you don't let your money go hard until you know it's a good deal. So your due diligence and feasibility, you got to be up on it completely. But are there any specifics, contingencies beyond financing that you would put in your PSA, your purchase sales agreement, that you would suggest?
I would put down that the due diligence period doesn't start until you get the full financial disclosures.
Okay. Very good. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. See you in a month.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you.
All right. Okay, who's next?
Okay, up next we have David. David, please go ahead.
Hi, Dave. How you doing?
Hey, how's it going?
Pretty good. I was at the UP9. I didn't get a chance to meet you. I did meet Jeff, though, so, and Jeannie. So it was a real great event. Yeah.
Good.
Two quick questions. Huh?
You said now it's my turn. You meant
your
turn?
Yeah.
Right? Is that what you said?
Yeah, about that. Yeah, that's true. Just a couple of quick questions. What are your thoughts on investing in, like, a Margus and Millichamp syndicated deal for a newbie just to establish credentials for a discussion with brokers?
That certainly is a possibility, yeah. I know students that have gone into different deals and they do exactly just that. They use it as credibility. So when a broker asks how much they own, they say whatever the size of the deal is. So, yeah,
okay.
I think that can be a strategy that works.
All right, good. I'm glad you endorsed that. And the other question is, I did purchase at UP9 a couple of certification programs. I just wondered, are they available now, or are we still waiting?
We're waiting for the contractor, the ones that put the back, it's called the back room together. It's like all the technical stuff behind it. So we were, I mean, at the time of the event, we had all of them recorded, and now it's a matter of them getting it in. You know, there's quizzes involved and tests involved and a bunch of these different moving parts, and it's taken a lot longer than we expected, certainly. We thought it was going to be done in September, October 1st
okay.
at the latest. But my understanding, though, is we're about 2 weeks away from launching them out there.
All right. And I guess we will know we'll get an email or something, or just show up at the website.
Oh, yeah. Those will be delivered. Do you get a password? A password will be delivered to you.
Okay.
Hey,
all right.
One thing about going into a syndicated deal, just make sure you understand all the fees. Some of them really put a lot of fees on, and some of them don't. So just know what fees there are going into the deal. I got the first couple of deals I did that I went into syndications before I started buying. My accountant told me that they wanted to know who these people were that I got into a deal because, you know, he slammed my taxes down. He said, "They're a bunch of whores." And I knew what he was talking about because they had front end fees, they had middle fees, they had monthly fees, and they had back end fees. So, and I didn't know enough to read all the fine print at the time. I know now. But so just know that. Know what fees there are going in.
All right, great. Thanks. That's good. Good advice. Appreciate it.
All right. Good luck.
Thanks.
All right. Who is next on the eve? It's not even the eve. It's the day of the start of the World Series, where my Boston Red Sox get knocked out early. The New York Yankees get knocked out next, and the Houston Astros are in the World Series. Believe it or not, 2014, they are at the bottom, in the cellar. Just goes to show you, no matter where you are in life, it doesn't take that much time to turn around, but it does take putting a good team together and focus. Always remember that. All right, who's next?
Okay, up next we have Rhea. Rhea, please go ahead.
Hi, Dave. It's Rhea in San Diego. How are you?
Good. What's going on there in San Diego? Beautiful weather?
Well, we're having a heat wave, which we're never going to complain about, but I was just up in Long Beach, and it was a really great event this past weekend. So Bob and they did a great job. So
good.
But I have a question for you. I'm working on a deal right now, and Jeff is my sponsor, Jeff Kissy.
Yep.
I thought I had an equity partner too, but it's looking like that's probably not going to happen. So my question for you is, what other options there are for raising earnest money? Jeff and I have talked, and he talked about a hard money loan, which I'm not thrilled about, but so I didn't know if there was any other options out there.
What about equity loan? Equity loan on your property?
To get the earnest money.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Okay.
Can you take out an equity loan on a property? Do you own a property? Any other properties?
I just own my house. I don't own any other properties right now.
And you have no equity in it?
Oh, I'm sure I do, but I don't know that I can get a loan because right now I'm not working besides the business. So.
Yep. There's a Jeannie knows a company from California that does deposit loans. Yep.
Okay.
It was actually a student. It's the son of Jan Salzman, who recently passed away. Unfortunately, great guy, great student. But so if you call the office, Jeannie will give you the referral over there.
Okay, I'll reach out to her.
Yep.
Thanks. And I'm going to see you next month too. So.
All right. Sounds good. You'll have a good time at the Harvard Club. It's going to be great.
Cool. Thanks.
You're welcome. See you soon.
Yep.
All right, who's next?
Okay. Up next we have Steve. Steve, please go ahead.
Hi, Dave. This is Steve. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. What's up, Steve?
Good. Hey, so I'm looking in markets with cap rates that average around 5 to 6.5%. And so the challenge I'm running into is when I talk to brokers, you know, in the beginning I was just coming out and saying, you know, my criteria is 8%. I think it might have turned off the brokers. So lately I've been talking to brokers, but you know, not really specifying cap rate, but just concentrating on my criteria being, you know, properties, 50 units with a value add component to it. And so, you know, they're sending me deals that are, you know, 5 to 6 cap rate. So how do I go back to the broker and say, hey, this is not really what I'm looking for, and just kind of mold them in a way that, you know, that eventually they'll get me those higher cap rate deals. I just kind of need some advice of like how to handle this situation, because I feel like in the past some brokers are like, oh, but you'll never find an 8 cap deal in this market. So how would you handle that?
You know, I think I think you changed your approach to. And the way you do it properly is by telling them up front that you're looking for a certain, you know, you're looking to buy. What cap rate did you tell them?
I told them, like, I was even afraid to tell him 8, so I just said 7. And he was like, oh, you know, that's 150 basis points, like, higher than the market here. So, I mean,
yeah,
ideally,
well,
yeah.
I mean, you know what they're telling you is that they don't do deals like that. And those, no matter what you do, you can't train a broker, you know, not to do deals that he's doing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So the best thing to do is you just weed him out. It's a numbers game. You just keep talking to him. You tell him that you do business typically at 7.5. You can say 7.5, 8 cap. 7.5, 8
yeah.
cap. That's usually where my numbers work. And blah, blah, blah. And they say, oh, you're not going to find that here. It's like, okay, thank you. Next. And you'll
on.
Get brokers. There's not a lot of them out there, but you'll get brokers that will say, okay, well, you know, it could be difficult, but let's see if we can work with that. And those are the brokers
okay.
that you're going to work with. Certainly,
yeah.
You can't work with everybody, and you can't convert people.
Yeah. Okay, that makes sense. So just be straight up with them in the beginning, and don't waste your time if they can't help you.
Yeah. Otherwise, you know, you're trying to keep asking the same girl to the dance, and she already told you no. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
No matter what you do, she ain't going with you.
Got
you
it.
Might as well find
it.
Up right up front and go for another girl.
Got it. Okay. Another question. You're talking about direct mail. So we've done direct mail pieces, you know, from anywhere from 5 units all the way to 100. And we found that the responses were mainly from owners that own 20 units or less. And so now we're looking at, you know, 50 plus units. And I'm wondering, I guess I'm wondering, you know, if we're sending to the owners of the apartment complexes that own the higher amount of units, like, are you still getting a response rate there? I feel like, at least for us, like, it wasn't as good. And, you know,
the response rate isn't as high, but all you need is a motivated seller up in that range to pay for your direct mail for the next 5 years. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
true.
Yeah, no, the response rate is not as high, but when you get one, and we got two properties in Fort Smith, Arkansas, many years ago, off of direct mail, 188 unit, and then after you know, we followed the 3 rules of a relationship, and closed
yeah.
the first one, he had one right behind him, so we got 2 of them.
Okay. How do you filter the list? Do you just look for individuals that own? Do you send to LLCs at all? Do you filter out trusts?
I send to everybody.
Okay.
Yeah, but I filter it. If I'm looking for larger properties, I filter it by assessed value. So, you know, I filter, like, I only want to do deals that have assessed value $2 million plus. Those are the people I'll mail
to. Yeah. Okay. Okay, great. Thanks, Dave. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. All right, who's next?
Okay, up next we have Stephanie. Stephanie, please go ahead.
Hi, Dave.
Yeah.
How are you?
I'm doing good. What's going on?
Little of this, little of that. I ran into Nissan, I think it was this week or last week, at family office event. Yes, so I had a question for you, Dave, about proposed tax law changes. And I wanted to know if you're hearing of anything that's been discussed that would negatively affect either our ability to invest in multifamily or ability to raise from individuals.
There's always things being talked about. So until they get close to passing, I really don't give them any credence. I just keep doing, you know, business as usual. That's all I can do. Nothing, you know, it's just so many things go on in the government now. It's just not predictable. So I'm trying to predict it. So
right.
No, I haven't really, I'm not changing my way of doing business right now because of something I heard. If that's to answer your question.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so just sort of full steam ahead, because I'm seeing a lot of deals in my markets since October, sort of like after the hurricane, and I'm just wondering if people were just concerned about, you know, legislation, and that's why there's a lot of deals that are becoming available. So I just want to make sure I'm not on the wrong side of the trade, if you know what I mean.
Where's your market?
I'm sorry, there's a lot of static on the line.
I don't know.
Oh, okay.
But where's your market?
Jacksonville, Florida.
That's still a good market.
Yeah.
You're seeing a lot of properties come on because it's a good time to sell. It's a good time to buy, but it's also a good time to sell.
Right.
You're seeing people that bought really early into the cycle selling off now, not waiting until the very top, which is a smart thing to do.
Okay, so it's not just because they think it's the top or there's some, you know, major problem that's coming along. It's, you know, just for them, it's a timely exit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Perfect. Great. Thanks much, Dave. Talk to you soon.
You're welcome. Good luck. So do you live in Jacksonville?
My brother does, who's my boots on the ground partner.
How often do you go down there?
I go 2 to 3 times a year. I was there last in April or May.
Have you been to the European Cafe?
No, I haven't. Where is that?
Next time, I think it's the street begins with M. I can't remember exactly. I think it's like, I think it's Marco Street. I'm not sure. But
okay.
When you go, they got all kinds of great desserts there, and they've got they've got cookies the size of hockey pucks, and they're moist all the way through. The size of their the chips. They get white chocolate chips, regular chocolate chips, coffee chocolate chips.
Oh, I love chocolate chips.
They're enormous. Yeah.
Really?
So the next time you go, right?
Yeah.
Send a care package up here.
I'll remember you, Dave, and my sweet son.
I would appreciate that. Because I don't get around much anymore since I had the kids.
Exactly. I was there. I understand your pain and pleasure. Take care. Thank you.
All right. Take care. All right. Who's next? Who's next on the Wisecracker line on this Tuesday afternoon, right after the Private Money Boot Camp, sliding our way into one of the events, what? Business building. Next one coming up. Yes. All right. Who's next? All right. The operator is getting a name, so I'm going to.
Actually, Dave, I'm so sorry. I'm here, but we have no further questions at the moment.
Okay, so chime in. The lines are open. And while you're chiming in, I am going to answer some questions. First, this one's from Harry Burgey from Inwood, West Virginia. I'm planning to bid on 136-unit property in Northeast Virginia today. Maybe my first deal. M&M Realtor says there's just one bid so far at full price. Should I believe him? It's always hard to tell, you know, if a realtor tells you the truth or not. If you have a relationship with them, you typically can ask for what's called price guidance, and they'll tell you. But if you're brand new with them, you know, having owned a real estate company, that is a famous white lie that people say. But the problem is you just don't know. I mean, you just don't know if it's true or not. If you don't think it's true, if the numbers don't work and you can't put in a full offer, then you just tell them you can't. See what happens. And then the next question is the property was self-managed for its entire life by a father and then his son. Records of expenses are sketchy at best. Is 35% a conservative number to use for total expenses to approximate the NOI? For 136 units, that's not all bills paid. You should be at 50%. 50% of the expenses. You could, yeah, that's right. That would be conservative. 60% for all bills paid. And those are my answers to your two questions. I'm going to do one more from Daniel Jenkins from San Diego, another San Diego person. By the way, there's a bakery in San Diego called the European. I don't think it's called the European Cafe. It might be. It's not the same owner, though. It's not the same type of bakery, but, oh, my God, the desserts over there are unbelievable. Just really, really good. If you're from that area, you know what I'm talking about. If you're from that area and you haven't been there, you got to go. All right, so Dan writes in, what would you do if you have the deal under contract, when you do your financial due diligence, you realize that the seller's numbers are worse than you first saw? Do you walk away from the deal? Do you renegotiate for the purchase price? You renegotiate. Well, first of all, if they're worse and the deal doesn't work, you renegotiate. If they're worse and the deal does work, you still renegotiate because they gave you the wrong numbers and see if you can get it lower. And if the deal doesn't work because of the numbers, and you go to renegotiate and they won't, then you just walk away. So that's when you walk away, after you've given it an attempt to get the price that you need. All right, who's next on the line?
Dave, there are no further questions at the moment. Just as a friendly reminder, if you have a question, press *0. *0 for questions, please. Thank you.
That's unusual. Very unusual. The first time, I think, ever since we've been doing these calls that we've had back-to-back no questions. Fred Harris from Dallas, Texas. He says, what is the best advice that you can give someone who has filed for bankruptcy less than 5 years ago and is still looking to do this business? Get yourself a partner. Get yourself a sponsor. Get yourself on a mortgage. Even though, you know, you get a strong sponsor, even though you've had a bankruptcy, you can still get on that mortgage because they'll rely more on the sponsor. And that's the way you're going to rebuild. That's what I would do. That's what I've seen people do, and it works. All right, I'm going to answer another one from Brandon Schmidt. I bet they call him Schmitty. All right, this one's from Schmitty. Did I already read that one? Hold on, let me see. This question might be down there twice. That was about an emerging market question. Nope, Brian Newell from Fullerton, California, and Brandon Schmidt from Castle Rock, Colorado, both had the exact same question. Do you know when the next emerging market list is going to come out? 10 days. Malcolm Clifton from Seattle, Washington writes in, should I have an SEC attorney draw up a PPM, private placement memorandum, which can be really expensive, or can I find it on Google and use that document? Well, Malcolm, you know what's more expensive? When you lose a lawsuit because you used a document for a private placement memorandum that you found on Google. That is the one area where you want to pay the attorney to do it and pay them, you know, the cost that it takes to do it. It could be anywhere, depending on the size of the deal, between $10,000 and $45,000. And also know that your investors are actually going to pay that. It's part of the closing costs. Usually it's due at the closing. If the attorney doesn't know you, they'll probably ask for a retainer fee. But the majority of it's due at the closing anyway. So unless if you need an SEC attorney, you're going to have investors because you would have created a security because you had two or more investors in the deal. So I was going to say if you're just doing the deal yourself, you wouldn't need it. So the answer is pay your SEC attorney. They're well worth the money to keep you out of trouble. Chris Nelson from Charlotte, North Carolina writes in, with all the storms in Texas and Florida, are those places we should be staying away from, or should we focus on those areas harder? You know, there's two camps. One camp is to go down there and get some good opportunities for properties that need rehab. The other camp is if you go down there and find good opportunities that need rehab, there may be a lot of water damage that you don't see, and you find out later. And that's the camp I'm in. There's a lot of good markets out there. I wouldn't be rushing into those markets. Plus, you know, those markets are probably so distressed in terms of number of contractors out there that it's probably really difficult to get a contractor to repair your property after you buy it. So you got to consider those things as well. John asks, I'm going to read the next two, and if there's no questions, I'm actually going to prepare for a 2 o'clock meeting that I have. So John Axton from Austin, Texas, writes in, why do banks require someone with experience when the deal is considered a reposition? Are they making sure that someone is there to handle something like that? The answer is yes. The biggest problem property I ever had was a 400-unit deal that I bought down in Huntsville, Alabama. I had not done a deal that size. It was early in my career in terms of emerging markets. I had not done a deal that size that far away from my base. I had done a lot of small rehabs, you know, so much so that I thought this wouldn't be a problem. It ended up being a huge problem because you don't know what you don't know in a repositioning until it catches you. And everything you don't know until you don't know in a repositioning, everything costs you money, unfortunately. And the two reasons that repositionings don't work is that buyer runs out of money, or you hire the wrong management company. So that's why they want to see somebody with experience running the job. And the next one is from Ricky Pollock from Kew Gardens, New Jersey. Any truth to the rumor that the market is going into a free fall? Well, I don't think so. I think there's going to be a correction, certainly, in different markets. I don't think we're going to see a free-for-all unless there's some sort of a, you know, major war happening and a major catastrophe. The war itself wouldn't be the problem. It would be, you know, if there was any nuclear, of the nuclear arsenal used, that would be a huge problem. So, no, I don't think, and if you're talking about the real estate market, I don't think you'll see a market change like we saw in 2009, 2010. But yes, it's definitely going to be a correction. You know, learning to be a conservative investor and buying the right properties in the right neighborhoods will weather you through that correction and give you the experience and the team to go out there and really kill it during the next correction. So we are welcoming the next correction. As a matter of fact, we're waiting for the next correction because there's going to be so much opportunity in that next correction. You know, it's just going to be, I'm waiting to stake a flag in a market like we staked a flag down in Texas and bought over 5,000 units. I mean, we're doing one-off deals in different markets throughout the U.S. But, you know, there's no market right now that's at the very beginning of an upturn. No major markets, anyways, at the very beginning of an upturn. We're waiting. Do I see a free fall? No. Do I see a correction? Yes. Is the correction going to be good? For those that have experience, the correction is going to be really good. For those that are just starting out in the middle of the correction, it may not be good. You could do what I did and buy that property that I bought, you know, because you don't know what you don't know. That's the big problem going into a correction without the experience. You'll have a deal that could be a gold mine or a landmine, and the only way you're going to be able to tell the difference, because everything looks good, it looks good, is your experience. That's why you get the experience going into the correction. Operator, anybody else come on?
Yes, we actually have a few questions. Our next question comes from Deborah. Deborah, please go ahead.
Hi, Dave. How are you?
Hey, Deb. What's going on?
I'm calling on brokers this week, and I'm a California licensed broker myself. So do I disclose that I'm a broker, but I'm going to obtain acquisition fees from our buyer side so that they don't feel threatened? And that they have to share commissions with me.
Are you going
me?
In to get a commission?
No.
No. Most of the state regulations say that you need to disclose upon serious negotiations. So I wouldn't disclose right up front. I would disclose, you know, when you maybe putting in an offer, maybe even a purchase. I used to disclose a purchase and sale. I'm a broker as well. I used to disclose a purchase and sale, and nobody really cared. And I didn't try – they cared if I was trying to get the commission, which I learned not to do early on. But otherwise, nobody – sellers don't care. Brokers don't care. Nobody cares. But you
okay.
have to disclose. Yep.
Okay. Thank you.
Is that the only question?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Good luck out there.
Thank you.
All right. Okay, who's next?
Up next, we have Darren. Darren, please go ahead.
Hey, Darren.
Hey, Dave, I'm back.
Hey.
I didn't know, how's it going? I meant to ask this question before, but since I had two questions and since I didn't want to kind of monopolize your time, but since it's not
again,
low
I can barely
on the questions.
Hear you. Whoa, I can barely hear you.
Okay, can you hear me now a bit better?
A little bit better. Still a little faint.
Okay.
Are you on speakerphone?
Okay. I'm actually on a handset, but that's weird. You can't hear me so well. Let me pull all the volumes up. How's that? Better?
Yeah, much better.
All right. Yeah. So I'm kind of partnering with another mastery student here in San Antonio, and we're looking at a 20 unit deal. And you may have kind of answered the question already. This is a serious rehab. Needs foundation work, needs some electrical, some plumbing. And so far, you know, it works if we put in $400,000 worth of rehab and do a major repositioning because of the area it's in. However, the first bid we got from a contractor came in at over $900,000. So we're kind of like, did we get another contractor in? And then the broker just called us this morning and said, yeah, I've got another person coming in. Doesn't look like your numbers are going to work because of the seriousness of the rehab. Kind of wondering how we should handle that situation. Should we just kind of step away and look for something better, or is it? Do you think that's something that is maybe
the reason
too ambitious?
You're close to losing the deal because of the expense of the rehab?
So far, yeah. I mean, we do have some other contractors we were going to take to go in there, but the broker is saying they've got somebody who is willing to put in a cash offer, and they're kind of like shying away from us right now.
Because
for it to work, it needs to be a major. Yeah, for it to work, it needs to be a major rehab in order to just take it to a whole different level as a property.
Yeah. Well, did they say if the other party's offering the same price?
No, they didn't disclose that.
I would still continue forward with the deal, get another contractor out there. And first of all, it gives you more experience. Secondly, gives you an idea of who you can work with in that particular market if you're going to stay there. Because you know, contractor prices could be somebody come in $100,000-$200,000 lower.
Yeah.
And those are the people that you need, you know, to continue to keep being efficient in the market. So I would go through the process of getting more contractors, finding more prices, to continue with the deal. They may be offering cash, but they may be offering a lot lower, you know, a lot lower price than you're offering.
Yeah, that could be the owner or the seller will not budge on the price because the land value has gone up so much in the area. And so that's kind of why we're seeing it as a good reposition, because the land values have gone up anyway, and the closest property, the rents in this one are highest of $650, but the closest property that we would be kind of matching at least in the level of rehab is the rents are over like $1,050, which is where it makes sense, you know?
Yep.
So just keep going on with some contractors, you think, right?
Well, it sounds. if you really like the deal, why not go forward? Unless you've got something else that's a better use of your time. If you get something that's a better use of your time, then do that. Otherwise, I would continue, you know, with the deal and get as much experience as you can out of it. And who knows, the other, you know, they may be offering all cash, and then they come back and they do a property inspection, and they come back and they want $1 million off the price or something like that. You know what I mean?
That's true. So, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so it certainly doesn't knock you out.
Yeah, keep knocking on that door.
Yeah.
Okay.
Door's open.
Thank you.
Yeah, good luck.
Thank you very much. Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. All right, who is next?
Okay, up next we have...
Go ahead.
We have Todd. Todd is next.
Todd.
Yeah, hi, Dave. I'm attending the sponsorship event in November, and
right.
I've been watching the DVDs and you know, where they introduce the sponsors. I was just curious, are some of those same folks, I mean, that's a couple 2 years old, are some of those same people going to be there as sponsors, or do you have a
yep.
new group? Or
some of them will still be there, and we'll have some new people as well.
Okay, and then would you, as far as what I am going to be bringing there, would you recommend the next few weeks I concentrate more on finding deals where I'm looking, or being better equipped to analyze deals for this event specifically?
I think
how
well,
I should spend my next
that's
kind of
like a catch 22 because if you're looking for deals, you need to be analyzing deals, right?
Right.
So, and you're watching the videos from 2 years ago, so you're getting a good idea of what sponsors are looking for in deal analysis. So I think you should take what you learned in those videos and go out and start looking for deals and analyzing those deals. And, you know, then there might be a chance that you actually come to the event with a deal. And that would be pretty sweet because that's what those sponsors do because they want to sponsor deals.
Gotcha. I also did the immersion training. So, some of it's kind of overlaps with the due diligence and whatnot. So,
Yeah, that's what I would do. I would see if you could come to the event with a deal. And then you could actually, you know, different sponsors like to sponsor different deals. And then you could find the right sponsor for that particular deal.
Excellent.
Yeah.
All right, thank you.
I guess we'll see you in a couple of weeks.
You bet.
Okay, take care. All right, who's next?
Okay, up next we have Joanne. Joanne, please go ahead.
Joanne. Is Joanne there? I got a funny story about a Joanne. If I have time to tell it, I will. Nope, operator Joanne.
Joanne, you're live. Okay, let's go to Eric. Eric is next.
Eric.
Hey, Dave. How you doing?
Good. What's going on?
Not much. I'm in Dallas, Texas. Actually, one of your newer students. I'm going to the immersion training this weekend. But
excellent.
My question is, I met with a potential equity partner to bring in the 20% and the rehab costs and the closing costs and all that yesterday. We're pretty big in the single family house game here. I mean, we do 20, 30 deals a month. We've just never tapped into the multifamily game. But anyway, so I went to my lender who only really lends on single family. And, you know, brought him this opportunity and said, hey, I want to start buying multifamily, and he likes the idea. So I kind of pitched him with a 50-50 split, right, as far as we would give his investors 50%, and then, me, I would take 50%, and then, you know, obviously I'd have to give 10% sponsorship to our coach, Jeff Kissy, and then I offered him, so that leaves 40%, right? And then I offered my lender 5% for him equity and then to split the acquisition fee with him. Just trying to keep in mind that normally he does debt financing, you know, points and interest and stuff like that, but this would be a little bit different of a ball game. My question is if we do a 50-50 split, right, chances are, you know, if we're buying at an 8 cap, 12% cash on cash and 1.6 debt coverage, that the investors aren't going to be able to get 8% if they're only getting 50%, you know, maybe like in the first year, you know. So is that something that, you know, so do I have to lower our percentage or, you know, how do I pitch that? Do I say, all right, well, you know, we're going to get you 8%, but we can't get it to you in the first year, or I can't get into you for the until the first 6 months, you know, just trying to kind of work through that. I mean, he seemed to receive it well, and he understands, you know, exactly what we're trying to do. I'm just wondering if, you know, maybe asking for 50-50 is too much and we're not going to be able to deliver on that 8% projected to the investors.
Yeah, and you can't get it because you have a value add? The numbers don't pencil out right now and you need a value add to get it up?
Well, I would just imagine because if, you know, if we do on your underwriting sheet and we get, you know, 12% cash on cash, if we do 50-50, that their portion is not going to add up to 8%, right?
No, at 12% cash on cash, it's a 75-25, 25 to you, 75 to the investor. That's how that works out. And it gives them an 8% cash on cash return.
So if I take more of a percentage, it just won't work?
unless they're willing to take less of a percentage. I mean, they're in terms of cash on cash return. You can talk about, you know, the equity splits on the resale of the property in terms of percentages, but when you talk about the front end returns, that's always based on cash on cash. So if they're looking for anything greater than 8, the answer is no. And if they'll accept less than an 8, then the answer is yes, depending on what they're willing to accept. Less than the 8 is how much more than the 25 you can get.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. Because I think it may work out. You know, if we're buying out 12% cash on cash and they're doing 50%, right? They're only going to get 6, so that falls short of their 8. So, you know, I don't know. Maybe I could say, look, you know, in the first year you won't get this, but you know, the second year you'll get this. So I guess, yeah, I guess it's up for negotiation, right?
All right. Well, congratulations. Right, well, good luck.
Appreciate
it. All right, listen, I've got I'm going to, I know I get 3 more minutes, but I've got to be at a 2 o'clock meeting that I've got to walk out the door and go to. So if anybody has any questions that I didn't answer, I'll be happy to answer them via email. If you want to email them over, just simply email them over to Jeff, and he will forward them to me. That's jlindahl@rementor.com. And, you know, you got homework. You got to do your homework. If you don't do your homework, then nothing's going to happen. And that homework is putting in 2 offers, and getting yourself into 2 networking situations. If you simply do 2 and 2, you cannot help but be successful. Easy as that. Seems easy, doesn't it? But, you know, I know that people aren't putting in the amount of offers that they should, and nothing happens until you offer. And it's not that you have to find a good deal out there to put the offer in on. It's the fact that you need to get in the game. You know, just talk to a broker. You know, take the next step. Maybe a negotiation is going to happen, but what it really gives you is confidence, knowing that you can speak this language, that you can do this business, that you're analyzing the deals properly, and if you're not, you know, what mistakes you're making. But it just takes you to that next step, and it gives you momentum, and momentum breeds deals. So that's what it's all about. Get an offer, get momentum, breed a deal. All right, I will see everybody in 2 weeks. And for those of you going to on that field trip, over to the family conference, the Wilson Family Conference, you need to call the office and sign up. I don't think we have a website to sign up on. Just call the office, talk to Jermaine, talk to Jeannie, get signed up for that, and we're all going to go down there in Miami December 5th and 6th, and that first call is going to be in a couple weeks. All right, talk to everybody soon. Take care.